Oh, it's 8:59. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, Press Watch, your weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program, hosted by Teresa Mitchell. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, Per Fogarang welcomes back Dr. Zahir Wahab to discuss his work in his home country of Afghanistan. And at 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, your daily news magazine. At 11, Between the Covers presents Solmaz Sharif's astonishing first book, Look, and at 11:30, Black Book Talk brings you Pulitzer Prize-winning author Isabel Wilkerson, fresh off of an appearance on Meet the Press, to talk about her book, The Warmth of Other Suns, the epic story of America's great migration. A great lineup this morning on KBOO, and thank you for becoming a member. And if you're not a member, I'll thank you if you go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. It's 8:59.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the opening reception for Giving Back, the Soul of Philanthropy, reframed and exhibited Tuesday, January 13th at 6 p.m. at Concordia University's George R. White Library in Portland. The reception is an opportunity to tour the exhibit, which illustrates the Black philanthropic experience, hear from exhibit creators, and connect with social justice movement leaders from across Portland. Again, that's the opening reception for Giving Back, the Soul of Philanthropy, reframed and exhibited Tuesday, January 13th at 6 p.m. at Concordia University's George R. White Library, 2811 Northeast Holman Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. First, a general strike update. The general strike on Inauguration Day is the one I'm talking about. Posters are going up in the Portland area. Portland Pioneer Square on Inauguration Day, January 20th, starting at 3 p.m., appears to be where some people will be meeting. I would say that's just part of it. Things will probably be moving sooner than that. J20 Resist, which is apparently mostly the Leninist group Workers' World Party is in, and Bernie Sanders supporters seem to be looking at protest action on the 20th. So that is still coming together. And just wanted to let you know what is happening with that. Last week I was talking about the Russians and Exxon, a rather weird alliance that is coming in to the White House now with Rex Tillerson in charge. And I think I might have confused some people, because if you're wondering if I go along with this idea that the Russians hacked the election, no, that's propaganda. That's bogus. It's fake news. But are the Russians going to profit along with Rex Tillerson? Oh, hell yes. Yes, they most certainly are. And you can find that program, last week's program, on kboo.fm/presswatch. And this week's show, of course, will be up in about an hour as well. Do you remember when Portland anti-Trump protesters made the news by smashing up a dealership's cars with a baseball bat? No, you don't. The man who destroyed the windshields of the cars had nothing to do with the protest. He was drunk and furious at his girlfriend, as the Oregonian revealed. But across the nation, people know And you can put that word in quotation marks. People know that Portland protesters were wild card destroying beast anarchists. Or they think they know that. They're quite certain when the Oregon came out with the when the Oregonian came out with the real story and the name of the guy who did it and why he did it. I don't think they came out with his girlfriend's name, thank goodness. There was no corresponding viral media outburst. It was a non-story. It was a non-story, and it was quickly forgotten even here in Portland. The people who rule us understand that we react to stories. They understand that first impressions last. This is just human. Even when the truth has to come out to contradict those first impressions, Exxon understands that and has worked overtime to make sure that U.S. citizens are in a fog about climate change. That's why I'm on the line right now with Steve Horn of DSmog Blog today. DSmog Blog works to expose the climate denial propaganda machine. And Steve Horn, welcome to KBOO.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you could join me. Back in August, when it seemed unlikely something called the Red State Gathering would be setting policy, DSmog Blog reported on the Koch brothers' efforts to promote petroleum use and attack, for example, one of the things they attack, electric vehicle subsidies. And their group is called Fueling Us Forward. Could you talk about what the Koch brothers are doing now and how it affects how we look at climate change?
So this is not reporting I've done, but as a website, we've definitely done a lot of reporting on what we call Koch v. Clean, or Koch versus Clean Fuel, Clean Energy. And one of the big things is fighting against electric vehicles. And so I'll just caveat that by saying those aren't always clean either. There are definitely problems with electric vehicles, depending on where the actual energy is coming from. Often these are just plugged into wall, like a power circuit that's powered by coal, for example. So that's where the electricity comes from. But on the whole, it's kind of a controversial topic in general. That said, still the petroleum industry and the petrochemical industry, including the Koch brothers and Koch Industries, doesn't like the idea of clean vehicles, and so they've waged a campaign using the American Energy Alliance and Institute for Energy Research, IER, both of those two, and then using some operatives within those groups to basically fight a battle against this very idea of electric vehicles. I think what's noteworthy about that is that it's not just the Kochs anymore. It's also that Tom Pyle, who is who runs the Institute for Energy Research and the American Energy Alliance, he is basically setting energy policy right now for the Trump team. There's a memo, there's an article just out today actually by Bloomberg that explains a lot of this, but in other articles before that, basically Tom Pyle is the head of the Department of Energy Transition team and wrote a key memo about a month ago that outlines Trump's energy policy. So this is the guy who's running that electric vehicle campaign, as well as now not going to be in the Trump administration, but he's been a key figurehead in the transition team itself that will obviously be influential in policy for the years to come.
Well, as the Trump machine and their climate denier allies take over the White House, several senators, including Oregon's Jeff Merkley, as of last July, banded together against climate propaganda, and DSmog Blog had an article on that. Do you know where that went? Do you think they're intimidated by the fact that the new Trump administration is coming in? Is that still happening?
I can just say in general, I don't really think that the Trump administration cares that much about what the minority has to say, the minority party being the Democrats, people like Merkley, et cetera. I think that it's very clear that looking at the comments made by Paul Ryan on the first day of Congress, where he made a speech in front of the House, basically they see this as the literal quote, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to pass through things they wanted to for a long time. I don't think they say they'll hear out the minority party. He said that in a speech, but they're not. I mean, I think that we're going to see a lot of policies pushed forward that have been, of course, pushed, but didn't have all three branches of government like they have now. So What we're going to see is a little bit unprecedented. They haven't had a mandate like this since the 1990s, really.
And it's funny. Where, I mean, they obviously stole the mandate, but go ahead.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, I think that the bottom line is that people like Merkley, you know, they hope that they can use their platforms for their constituents and for the grassroots. But in terms of legislative power, this is definitely a tough time for anything that has to do with you know, clean energy or, I think more profoundly, it was a very good time for the oil and gas industry. The American Petroleum Institute came out yesterday, said the same thing. We have a mandate now. We think that this is basically the greatest times of our lives. I'm paraphrasing, but literally the president of the American Petroleum Institute came out with a statement talking about how excited they are. So it remains to be seen what that will look like, but all the stars are aligning for sure.
Well, it reminds me of the recent frou-frou over the gutting of the Congressional Ethics Office, and then that was reversed due to popular outrage. So I would say it would appear that the way to move forward now is to take direct action. People of color in the United States are facing threats of deportation, the ascendance of a pro-mass incarceration state, racist fascist regime. In other words, immediate and pressing existential threats. So what can the climate anti-pollution agenda offer? What intersection exists between melting ice caps and the struggle people of color face every day?
I think that the Standing Rock protests that happened in North Dakota near the Standing Rock Reservation, Standing Rock Fighting Sioux Tribe, is probably the best example of a prolonged on-the-ground battle against an infrastructure project. It seems like infrastructure projects like pipelines and other midstream infrastructure like that will be things that Trump is going to push. The Dakota Access is probably going to get a renewed push just in a matter of weeks. It's on hiatus right now, but he's expressed that he's going to push that. And Keystone XL is another example. I think that looking at what happened in Standing Rock, it was not just that it was an environmental struggle. It was actually a intersectional struggle between Native American tribal sovereignty, sort of environmental justice, then that it impacted the indigenous community. I think that these communities will have to work together given the threat that you just outlined. I think that it's definitely, they have a very good example in Standing Rock, and I think that Standing Rock will continue as a struggle, although it's on hiatus now because of some maneuvers that the Obama administration made to put it on hold until Trump gets elected, basically a punt, but it's going to be revamped just in a matter of weeks.
Seems that people of color are likely to be disproportionately, if that's that word that conservatives can't hear, disproportionately affected by sea level rise, heat waves, insect infestation, zoonotic diseases,
you know,
population displacement, storm damage, crop failure.
Yeah, I agree with all that. One thing I should say is that I just talked about midstream infrastructure like pipelines, but what's often not looked at is where this stuff ends up. Usually ends up in refineries down in the Gulf Coast. And if you look at who lives near those refineries in the Gulf Coast, it's generally people of color. It's Latino Americans. It's African Americans. So that's been a environmental justice issue for a long time that people haven't really been paying attention to unless you really follow those issues closely locally down there. But that's where, for example, the Dakota Access Pipeline and the Keystone XL, that's where those pipelines terminate or end up, is right down there in the Gulf Coast in what's known as quote-unquote Cancer Alley. So there's all kinds of intersectional issues with this. It's not only Native Americans. It's also Latino Americans. It's also African Americans. And what they hope for is that we don't connect these dots, but the dots are all connected in terms of fossil fuel industry profits, in terms of Wall Street profits, in terms of who gets impacted disproportionately, as you said.
Well, speaking of Dakota Pipeline protest, DSmog blog had an article about Tiger Swan and its work against the Water Defenders. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, Tiger Swan was one of the contractors hired to manage intelligence gathering for the owner of the Dakota Access Pipeline, Energy Transfer Partners, and it came out in a report about an incident with the there were some dogs that were unleashed. It became a very viral video from a different company, Frost Kennels, which is in Ohio. But in that report, they outlined other contractors who were involved in the sort of the whole, because it was a report on contractors. And one of them that was listed, if you look closely, was Tiger Swan. And so what prompted me to do the reporting was that, and then looking who is Tiger Swan. So Tiger Swan is a company that has some ties through its founder and CEO to Blackwater USA, or what used to be called Blackwater USA, which is, I believe, now known as Academy. At one point it was known as Z.
Yeah, they keep changing it.
Yeah, they changed name. There was a major, and that gets to the big story, is there's obviously with them, Blackwater, a very controversial company who did contracting with the United States military and the United States State Department after the occupations in Iraq and Afghanistan. They were involved in Nisour Square massacre shooting of, I believe, 17 Iraqi civilians about a decade ago. So that's why they changed names after that happened, rebranded.
A very dangerous bunch. And I would say,
yeah,
looking at history, they will now be brought to bear against us because they're very close to the Trump administration, Prince, and his family.
Yeah, very close. I mean, that's tangential but important. His education secretary, Betsy DeVos, is actually the sister of Eric Prince. So that was her married name is DeVos, but she was originally in the Prince family and his yeah, so that's the family connection. But just, yeah, so that, going back to Tiger Swan, they have had business relations in the past, and Tiger Swan has had contractual relationships with the State Department, with the U.S. Military, et cetera. So they're not even close to as big as Blackwater. Blackwater's, Academy is a global company. Eric Prince is not involved with Blackwater anymore or Academy. He has his own new company and new stuff he's working on. He's been sort of a kind of ousted from the company because he's a controversial figure. But yeah, I mean, it's, I think the bottom line is that there are a lot of contractors involved. Tiger Swan is sort of emblematic of the militarized response to, and the privatized response to what happened and what's happening at Standing Rock. So I thought that was just like an interesting tidbit that was in that report that I thought deserved some context. So that was why I wrote the story.
Time is 9:17 Pacific, and you're listening to KBOO Press Watch. I'm Teresa Mitchell. I'm on the line with Steve Horn of DSmog Blog. You may have noticed it's 20 degrees outside, and if you look at the polar weather map, you can see that air that really should be around the pole right now has been shoved down this way. There are places northeast of northern Greenland that are warmer than Portland was last night. If you are outside, if you are shivering, you may want to call 211, look for warming shelter. Even the Portland City Hall is open today. Or just get on a TriMet bus. I used to be a TriMet driver. I'm now retired, and so I know the magic words, so please memorize them. I need to ask for a courtesy ride. Those are the magic words, courtesy ride. TriMet drivers are trained to give courtesy rides. WorldNet Daily reports, these are big news here, woman finds snake in toilet, demon army on loose, and the blockbuster, sea ice as thick as 75 years ago. It's fake news, but the Google News search engine promotes it right next to real news about thinning sea ice. So, Steve Horn, what resources do you rely on for DSmog Blog?
Great question. I think that I often tell people that I try not to rely on any one source too heavily. I would I would say that if I did have to recommend one website to read daily, it's probably The Intercept, because they do great reporting and it's original. They don't curate anything. It's all their own, and they spend a lot of time and resources on each story.
Glenn Greenwald and the bunch, and they do really good
work. Yeah, they really do. But overall, one of the main ways I get my content is just by topic. So if I'm interested in, like you said, fake news and what the reporting is on fake news, I'll just do a Google alert. I'll go to alerts.google.com and I'll put in fake news, like in quotes, so that it gets crawled exactly with that term, fake news, and see what in general is being reported on fake news, so that at the end of the day I can come to my own conclusions and sort of my own reporting or whatever I'm working on, my own my reporting instincts will bring me to whatever I report on, but at least I get a wide range of what's being said about fake news and sort of come to a conclusion from there. So I think Google Alerts is one of the greatest things out there, is just that at least you can get a broad range. And I'm not, you know, obviously I'll come to my own conclusion at the end of the day, but at least you're not subject to gatekeepers, one website's conclusion, but you get, literally hundreds of websites, hundreds of news websites, different stories, and you can put it together for your own analysis. So I think Google Alerts are probably the best thing out there.
Yeah, I have to agree. Very handy for putting together a counter-propaganda program. Well, the climate crisis, I think you would probably agree, is already an emergency. So I'd like to ask you to talk about feedback loops, soot melting ice, which dries forests, which makes more fire, which produces more soot, warming soil, releasing methane and CO2, which warms more soil, ice melting, which produces more ice melting, etc. You still there?
Yeah, I'm still there. Yeah, feedback loops. In the scientific community, there is some controversy over the extent of, I will say, like the methane gun, and whether and how quickly that's producing feedback loops. But I don't think there's no controversy over climate change. There's no real debate. It's just a debate over the extent of climate change. And then on feedback loops, I don't think that there's even any debate that we're creating them and making the potential for those feedback loops worse. I think the only debate is what's the extent and how quickly those feedback loops will happen. A good example is the melting Arctic, as you mentioned, the Arctic vortex. There could be feedback loops from that melting. There will be feedback loops from that melting Arctic. And there's already consensus that the melting Arctic is creating this Arctic vortex, which, for example, looking at the temperature right now, as you mentioned, in Portland, Oregon, the temperature here is even a little bit seasonably low, wind chills of about 5 degrees in Indianapolis, usually more like around the temperature that you're mentioning would be the low in Portland would be the temperature here. So it's even lower here.
Wow.
Where I was living, Madison, Wisconsin, it probably means that it's well below zero wind chill right now, which would be seasonably very cold, even for Madison, Wisconsin. That has to do with the Arctic vortex.
Well, I'm talking with Steve Horn. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. It's 9:22. Now, I'm getting on in years, pushing 60, and I wonder, does anyone else remember Ronald Reagan and his Fox in the Hen House appointments, and Rita Lavelle and Ann Gorsuch, later Ann Gorsuch Burford, in the EPA and the damage that they did? And so I'd like to talk with you about that. Let's talk about regulatory capture, and let's talk about Fox in the Hen House appointments, maybe the appointment of Scott Pruitt.
Yeah, Scott Pruitt has been compared to who you just mentioned, and that he's probably one of the most extreme appointees, one of the most extreme in the history of appointees to the Environmental Protection Agency. And so his nomination hearing will probably happen after the inauguration, so in a couple weeks. Some of the hearings in front of Congress will already begin next week and will be pushed through very quickly. It's a very busy week next week. I think there's Department of Education, there's Department of State, and there's Department of Justice. All three of those will be put in front of Congress next week, while a bunch of other stuff is going on, including the president, President Obama's farewell address and some other agencies' farewell addresses. So there's a lot going on next week. I think the point is to try to get these through as quickly as possible with as little debate as possible. That's the goal of the Republicans in Congress, especially for these controversial ones like Josh Sessions, like Rex Tillerson. I don't really know how they're going to handle Pruitt, but I imagine they'll try to push that through quickly as well. So Pruitt, just to talk about who is he, why is he controversial, he basically has no experience as someone who's run an environmental protection agency at all, even at the state level. He was the Attorney General of Oklahoma and saw himself as an opponent of the EPA. If you look at his bio, it basically says that he saw his goal as an attorney general as kind of halting the overreaching EPA. And so he's someone who's has filed many lawsuits against the EPA on some of its landmark regulations that it was trying to push forward, like the Clean Power Plan, for example, that would regulate coal-fired power plants, like the methane rule, which would regulate for fracking methane emissions and across the supply chain for fracking would regulate various aspects of that. He's always been in opposition to that. So he's basically seen himself as a key opponent of the EPA. Now he has been hired to run the EPA by President-elect Trump. So we'll see how that works out. But I think most people think that that means that all of these regulations that were proposed by the Obama administration are going to be basically wiped out by Pruitt if he does get through. And he will be one of the more contentious ones. But like I said, they're maneuvering it right now to have as little debate as possible and push these things through and make members of Congress very busy so that they're dealing with several nominees at once and running back and forth between hearings for the various committees. So,
ironically, the Democrats scotched the filibuster, so they can't stop it that way.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And the nuclear option with, that was put on the table by the now departed, I forgot his name, but Harry Reid. So, that's what we're dealing with now. It's exactly, there's no filibuster option. They can put up opposition, they can ask hard questions, but at the end of the day, there is no filibuster option. So by lack of having a majority, unless some Republicans come on board, most of these people are going to get through.
Well, I was going to ask you about Rex Tillerson, but we're running.
No, we can talk about Tillerson for sure. Yeah, okay. If you want to talk about him. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned that at the onset, the stuff with, I mean, today there was a hearing, a major hearing, the Senate Armed Services Committee on potential alleged Russian hacking, at least into the, it wasn't about, I mean, some people say they hacked the election. The hearing was not at all about that. I think that was, that's, no one believes that in the intelligence community, but there was discussion of hacking into John Podesta's emails and hacking into the DNC during the election cycle. And so the hearing was definitely about that, but it was basically more generally about the upcoming report that they will release next week, which will be interesting for sure. I think it will be the first time where we'll at least be able to have some general idea of what they're talking about, because right now there's just a lot of rumors and a lot of anonymous sources and stuff like that. Next week, the report will come out, and apparently there'll be hearings and stuff. But and that brings us to Tillerson, who it's somewhat in a related way. I wouldn't say 100% related. There's really some people have, again, said, oh, well, he was hired because he has close ties with Russia. Yeah, that's part of it.
I think he certainly does. You know, we are out of time.
Does.
And Steve Horn, I have to thank you so much for calling in and sharing your information. Steve Horn of DSmog Blog. And you can find it on the web. Thanks so much for calling in, Steve.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Take care.
Bye-bye. And you've been listening to Press Watch. I see Pear out in the hall getting ready to come in. And then we'll be talking about Afghanistan next. So stay tuned for that on KBOO Portland, broadcasting on 90.7 from our red and white Eiffel-like tower on the hill and other frequencies in Cascadia, broadcasting on KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Engineering Committee will meet on the first Wednesday at 7 p.m.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fagring, and the show is Fight the Empire. And today I have two guests. I hear